No, it's okay. Yeah. So let me welcome you to our last NIST lecture of this academic year. We have the pleasure to have May Torsett here. She's a professor at the Department of Philosophy and Religious Studies coming from NTNU Trondheim down, and she is the director of the NTNU Program for Applied Ethics, a member of the management group of NTNU Sustainability, and vice chairman of the NTNU Research Ethical Committee. And she has a research focus also on ethics in information and communication technology, and today we challenge her on ethical issues in security, and particularly on hacking. It's very interesting, I think, to get a different point of view from a non-computer scientist, but somebody with an, say, flair for it. We are very much looking forward to your lecture.
Thank you. Okay, technology. Yes, I'm very happy to have been invited here, and the message was that, I take it that you know all about technology, so that's not the reason why I'm here. But hopefully we can develop something together during this lecture so that we can see that there are things we can that needs two kinds of competencies in order to formulate the issues, and that's actually quite important when I talk about applied ethics as such, because it's not that ethicists come and tell people in other disciplines what to do or what not to do. It's more about identifying what are the issues, what are the what should we care about? What are the important dilemmas? And I very much like to talk about dilemmas. I mean, the clear-cut cases when someone commits a crime or does something which is obviously wrong, that's quite easy, most often, to identify. Although not always, but quite often. So it's this gray zone, actually, that is the field of interest, I should say. So this is just to say something about applied ethics at the outset. So it's it takes double competence in order to do good applied ethics, which means that in order for me to do something interesting and some qualified applied ethics, I need to understand what's going on in the other fields that where I am not a specialist. But then it also takes this ethical competence in order to see how do the norms, how do the basic ideas, ethical concerns, what do they look like from within the particular field. So this double competence is my approach here. And I should also like to say that although this is about ethics and technology today, it's also very much we also come very close to talking a bit about research ethics, which is a concern both at an individual and institutional level. This lecture will focus on risk aspects of hacking from an ethical point of view. That was in the announcement. So we'll see where we get today. My ambition is, the criterion of success today would be that those of us who are here have something more to have some better funding for ethical reflection around the practices, around the problems that you are dealing with. My first question is hacking one kind of action? Of course, my response would be no. But if I ask you, who are most of you, I take it, specialists in information technology, I mean, hacking is, of course, a word which is used by non-specialists, and it's used by specialists, of course. But if I ask you, what comes to your mind first when I ask you about hacking? Just doing some expert work, okay? But but hacking has also some other connotations, doesn't it? I mean, it sounds like something which is not quite good or not. Okay, you have cracking, which is when you are doing hacking in a. Okay, no, but it's good because I think that there is some such neutral understanding of hacking, but let's move on a bit. I sense that you are not all you don't all agree that we all talk about one kind of action, but let's see where we get. Why are we are you dealing with hacking when it's not cracking? What's the purpose of it? Well, my I've tried to bring up some of those responses that we could get if we think about what is in the media, what do people talk about? Because very often it has a very negative connotation, which it obviously does not need to have. But let's see. The reason for doing this is very often to repair some system, isn't it? Yeah. But it's also kind of hacking. It's because in order to to get a little bit under the surface, for what purpose do we repair a system? Exactly. And I think that that's important because you said first it takes specialized competence. Of course it does. And it requires and skills. But it depends on who is doing it. So this indicates the last response indicates that it's not necessarily one kind of action, especially not if we take an ethical perspective on it. So that's where I want us to go for a while. One suggestion could be that hacking could be for protecting privacy. Would you agree to that? It depends also, okay? And hacking could also be for making sure that we maintain trust relations. But it becomes interesting if there is a tension between privacy, protecting privacy on the one hand, but then maybe losing out on trust. But let's just move on a bit more. One next question, is civilian hacking comparable to the authorities' hacking for safety reasons? Of course, I'm not talking about one or two actions here, yes? Sorry, if you are civilians or, yeah. Yeah, so here we question who is actually responsible for the act being done. Is it a civilian or is it the authorities? Okay, another one. We have maybe already mentioned it briefly, but there might be, and that's where hacking becomes quite interesting, where we have conflicting interests between privacy and security. I think we all need, we would all agree that we need to protect privacy to some extent. But if we go too far, it may be that we lose out on security. And when exactly does that happen? we are not going to give the responses now, but I'm just trying to raise these issues first. Sorry? Yes? Okay, so I think that's a good point, because privacy needs to be protected, but only to a certain degree. If protection of privacy could also be a threat to security, right? Okay, so and of course the question to you, to all of us as researchers, as academics, is we are dealing with stuff which is not neutral. It's very much, it depends on, well, we know it's politically contested. Where should we draw the line? Where we prioritize security to privacy, or vice versa? This huge debate, for instance, when you talk about big data, and you know all these topics, which is not only for experts. This is something which is something for the whole of society. So it's actually very much about democracy. It's very much about what kind of society we want to have. So that's the bit where I want us to get today. Okay. So when and in what way and why may hacking imply risk? And I think that's the questions that you would normally not raise while you are developing the new technologies. Because, I mean, all of us, we want to continue to do what we are specialized in. But, and also, there's this dilemma that we do not know when will it be used for the good and when will it be misused. And I mean, that's a very genuine, general topic for all kinds of emerging technologies. Whenever we are able to do something very sophisticated with technology, there would always be those who are non-experts and those who have not so good purposes who would also acquire this kind of competence. So, let's see. The last point here, conflicting interests between maintenance of security and maintenance of trust relations. What is at stake? Okay. How many of you have seen these hats? You know them? You are familiar with them? Okay. You have all of them? Okay. The white ones. And there is also, I learned to know that there is also a blue one when bug testing and so on, but that's not interesting in our case. And so then you already know a little bit, or quite a lot, about these different hats. And that brings us a bit back to the first, where we opened the question today, what is hacking? Because there is white hacking, and there is grey, and there is black hacking. And maybe the clear-cut cases are the black ones. I think that's the category that most of us would be quite that would be quite easy to identify. The white one, most often. But let's just move on a bit to the. I don't know if it shows here, but that's the white one. Let me just make sure that I picked up on something which resonates well for you. If you think this is okay for the white hat, an ethical hacker. I think that's something. For instance, to identify places to repair. I think that is compatible with what we said earlier. The white hacker uses knowledge of computer security systems to compromise the organization's systems, just as a black hat hacker would. And I think that's so far so good. I mean, it's the same kind of thing, technologically speaking. But however, instead of using their access to steal from the organization or vandalize its system, the white hat hacker reports back to the organization and informs them of how they gained access, allowing the organization to improve their defenses. Does this sound like how you normally would think about the white hat hacker? Yeah. Create, yeah. Yeah. So you would also include in this white hat definition that it's also about designing the system, not only repairing it. Okay, good. So, but I think that that works well with the definition. So that could be added. Yeah. Good. Thanks. Yeah. Mm. Mm. Yeah. 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 So the rules of so it's actually not that clear cut either when you talk about that. And I think that's a good actually it's good to get us there to see that although we talk about the white hat hacker, it's not that easy because after all, there is always someone's interest that is served. And I think that's the basic thing. And it could be a firm, and there is a huge topic, whose knowledge should this be? If you design a system, of course the designing is important, or if you repair something which would be very, very useful for very many others, then those who have asked for this particular knowledge to be brought up. So I think that's an issue here. Let's see at the grey hat if you could agree on that. For instance, to notify an administrator, we could also here add that creating the system, designing the system, of course. But to notify an administrator about a defect system and then offer to correct the defect for a fee. A grey hat hacker may publish the facts to the world. A grey hat doesn't work for their own personal gain or to cause carnage, but they may technically commit crimes and do arguably unethical things. So this, you feel that this is more or less how you also think about the grey. My purpose here is to bring up this grey zone because the grey hat is it could be for the good. But it could also be for, maybe not for personal profit, but still not quite okay, because there could be some technical crime. So maybe the definition at the outset is okay. So let's then just briefly see what we could say about the black hat. Someone who violates the computer security for personal gain. And if this is a clear-cut difference between the gray and the black, maybe that's not that important, but it's fruitful to try to make some such distinctions. So to violate computer security for personal gain, or to violate computer security for such as stealing credit card numbers or harvesting personal data for sale to identity thieves. I mean, that's, I think, what media picks up on. Or for pure maliciousness, such as creating a botnet and using that botnet to perform DDoS, that you would know what is. I don't know exactly what that is, but we don't need it for the moment. A special kind of attacks against websites they don't like. And again, would we then conclude that the black hat, it's normally it would be a definition of a criminal. But is it that easy? Is a black hat or by stick to this definition, would that always be a criminal act? Or could we imagine situations, contexts where it could not be? We don't need to spend much time, but if you have some short comment, we could just bring it with us now. Otherwise, we can just get back to it because I save time. Exactly. So the definition of crime is to break a law. But we also know that in some countries, for instance, quite non-democratic countries of different kinds, there are policies that democratic countries or people from democracies would not approve of. And then it's a question whether we would say that it's illegal. Maybe it is an act which is illegal according to that particular law. But, and there, here comes an important distinction between what is legal and what is legitimate, or what is illegal, which is runs contrary to the law, and what could still be legitimate. We could have good reasons for breaking the law, because not all laws around the world are legitimate, although they have a law. Many people would say that China is, when it comes to the internet and how they treat information technology, maybe, or quite certainly, I should say, the censorship going on there, very many people would say that it's not legitimate. But it is illegal. I mean, we have been cooperating with academics, and there are really hard times these days because the information flow is seriously controlled, and it's very hard. So I think it's quite easy to come up with examples where the legal and the legitimate doesn't necessarily go together. Okay. So these were the hats and the definitions. So I wanted now to get a little bit further to different scenarios of hacking. One main conclusion this far is that when we talk about the white, the grey and the black hat hackers, not crackers, those are black, when we talk about this, or use this as a division line between the different kinds of hacking, we very quite easily find contexts where the definition of, or the division line between the different categories is not that clear cut. So the first thing is that we need a contextual definition, which means that we cannot actually establish clear-cut definitions of these acts before we actually are dealing with certain acts. So that's the first point. The next one is that, following from the first one, that there's a blurred line, lines between different acts of breaking into security systems. So now let's see if we can... what we've been talking about, to repair a system for the good of a company and then sharing the knowledge with others. Would that qualify as a white hat hacker or a grey hat hacker? You see the dilemma, right? Because some company has paid for it, but then, as with all kind of research, we don't at the outset, or before we start, know exactly what we come up with. And maybe we detect or find out something which should be disseminated or known by others. Laura? Yeah. Okay. So. Yeah. Please. Yeah. So one way of distinguishing would be following or not following the rule. Would be decisive for saying that it's a white or a grey hat. And I think that actually it's no problem to have such a definition. Or is it? I'll just come to that in a while. Yes? Yes? I think that's very good, because when you repair something and find something which is actually it would be unethical not to share this knowledge with others, but still there are some constraints built into the contract before you start. Yeah. Yes. Sir. So that's the dilemma, because you cannot beforehand say exactly what would the result be. You know what the premises are, you know where you start, but I mean that's also the ethos of all development of knowledge, be it academic or otherwise. It must be open, and it must be something which is not locked into smaller rooms and only for some few people. And but we'll have to move on a bit. I try to also put up as kind of a context authorities' surveillance of individuals. For instance, the police hacking into personal computers just some few days ago. There was, or there is every now and then, but very recently there has been some solicitors who commented on this in Aftenposten, but you know these things. Anyway, authorities' surveillance of individuals. Police hacking into personal computers, mobiles and tablets. Yeah, here's a reference to the mention of it in Aftenposten. Is this a white hat, a grey hat, or a black hat? And I think that from what we already said here, it's the only thing which is obvious is that it's not obvious that it's a grey hat or a black hat, or a maybe most people would say it's not exactly a white hat, because there is very much resistance to this big data, or this is not actually big data, but this hacking into. But it's done for the sake of security, right? And here we have the dilemma, because if we want individuals in the society to trust the authorities, to trust the police, well, this is actually doesn't contribute very much to building trust, does it? But then we also, how should we cope with it? Because obviously there are dangerous people. There are, as we all know, we need to be alerted if someone is going to commit a bomb suicide or, yeah, you wanted to commit. Yes. Yeah. Yes. But if you create this, we only open the Pandora's box there. Okay, yes. Yeah. I'll soon rush. But I think that here we touch. We have to close this. I'm sorry because, I mean, this is something. Sorry. I think what we are now getting into is that should we prioritize security or privacy, and what has been said here is that the security for many alt rules. Privacy for few, so that's one. But then the dilemma that we also touch upon here is that if we have extended surveillance in society, then we have another problem with trust relations. So how to find the balance? Because if we have extended surveillance, we act as if most people are potentially criminals, which we also know that they are, of course not. But also, this is politically debated. But that also makes it this very tricky because, as a matter of fact, both ethicists and computer scientists, we move around in a field which is very politicized. But I think what is important is to not be naive, to be aware. How do we actually contribute to this public debate? Because these issues are debated, and also there is another issue that we could talk about another time, and that's the connection or the relation here between experts and lay people. Because that's really an issue. But that's not the issue for the lecture today. But maybe we can come back to that later on. The last point on this slide was actually just to mention this. What about breaking into computers of suspected criminals? And of course, many people would say that if we could be quite sure that we know who those potentially criminals are, maybe we would be, most people would say that we are willing to accept that, but not necessarily being willing to do surveillance of all the population in case someone commits a crime. Just mention some few others before I get to the. I'm halfway, so the last six slides will. Civil obedience. Actually, we already indirectly mentioned it, but contexts of hacking could be civil obedience due to lack of rightful information. For instance, in a democracy, sharing of knowledge commons, I'll get to knowledge commons in a while, just briefly mention a difference here between some people have tried to say, well, why is it that India is better off than China? And that's because China allow for, and this was about giving out information or letting people know about diseases. That's something that the evils that they could have prevented if they had the the information. So this civil obedience. So I know there is something called something about some kind of worm or something you can send out in the system to try to inform people since they do not get the information they should have had. I mean, you know the technology here, but this kind of civil obedience to do something which is not, which is against the law, but would still be okay because it serves a purpose which is valuable. and one thing we haven't mentioned yet, but industrial espionage. Would it be okay to disseminate industrial secrets? And I think, again, we come back to what we already said, it depends. I mean, of course, if we, yeah, could you imagine a scenario where it would be okay to disseminate industrial secrets? What kind of secrets could that be? Yes. Exactly, that's the kind of thing, and it's easier for you who are maybe into this information technology to think about what kind of information. But I think we could all, even without being experts on information technology, imagine some such category or kind of information that would be unethical, actually. Not to, but industrial espionage. I mean, it could be sometimes it's reduced to a question between, companies. I mean, one company doing espionage of another one. But there's a different scenario when we think about someone who, I mean, just think about the atomic bomb or whatever. I mean, Snowden, of course, it's an obvious case. Yeah. So, I'm sure that maybe I should ask you, do all of you here agree to what Snowden did? Was that a good thing?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so at least two people here disagree, but some people here agree. Yeah, but why do we agree? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But I think that here we actually touch upon this question, where should we draw the line? Should we put security first or privacy, protection of privacy first? But this actually is about both, because it's also dangerous. If people do not know that they are victims to surveillance by the authorities, and also, I mean, most people would say that it's clearly a problem if some criminals do this. And have obviously have bad purposes. But also, it's also about a principle here, I think, which is debated. Okay, Laura just told me we have 5 minutes left. Snowden, like cases, we have them. Okay, authorities, hacking of individuals. Well, just to make this distinction here between does it make, or ask the question, does it make a difference whether we talk about hacking of individuals, I mean social life, on the one hand, and companies, industrial secrets, on the other? I mean, some people would say it's about a principle. It's principally wrong to break into someone's, to look into something that people haven't approved of or given their consensus to. It's like when you do medical research, we should ask for permission for that people agree. Okay, rush a bit. We have to come to the ethical dilemmas. Actually, we have talked about them a lot, so we don't need. So the question was, do we have to choose between either security or protection of privacy? What kind of info should be considered private and not to be shared by all? We want this, but here, this is one of my important things, that the importance of judgment. We cannot stick to fixed definitions of hacking because, because there are divergent aims of security. Security is not only one thing. Hacking may be illegitimate, as I already said, although not illegal. I think we can find clear cases of that. And hacking may also be illegal while still legitimate. Here I found some. I thought, how should we visualize these different acts of white, grey, and the purpose of just showing these photos is that we cannot see what's going on. We cannot. Any of these pictures could depict. Any of these different kinds of hacking, I suppose. Except for the last, the bottom one, hacker attack, sounds like something which is both illegal and illegitimate. I'm saying that I think it's good to use them as a kind of a device for trying to make clear what should we care about. But I think we shouldn't say that here we can bring up a list. That's my only point. It's not that it's not valuable, but I think if we use it for saying that here we have a list of actions, these are white hat actions, etc.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And this is actually a problem about, I think, the difference between experts and lay, because experts would know about this. I mean, all these tracks, all what you leave when you, which is kind of invisible. I mean, oh, that was maybe not. Yeah. Exactly. Mm. Okay, but I hope we have opened the floor for some of those. I'll just give you all this, because there was one thing I actually had intended to talk about, which I don't have the time to. But to make a distinction, when you talk about what values are actually threatened, we have been talking about privatization of knowledge, treating knowledge as a scarce resource. And I think that's the problem, and here's a connection also to research ethics, because when we come up with new knowledge in a research field, it should be shared by everyone. And this is Elinor Ostrom and many others have started to talk about copyleft rather than copyright. I suppose you know this. And this is kind of an ideology, but it also is important when you talk about what's the purpose of research. It is to bring up more and more truth, right? It is to come closer to some idea we have of truth, to get better knowledge. You know, NTNU's logo, knowledge for a better world. Yes. So, but knowledge, and if we should, if we should be capable of doing so, we need to be open. So we need a certain level of both open science. That has become a slogan these days, but I think it's also important because it captures some of this which is very important in research ethics. And we don't need to look at all these, but there is one. Yeah, I mentioned Nostrum. I could leave the slides here afterwards. QDOS, I would just like to mention that. Have you heard that word, that acronym? Yeah, it stands for some basic rules in research ethics. It's communism, it's not about a communist regime. it's about the sharing, yeah. And it's universalism, disinterestedness, which is always a problem where we have companies and special stakeholders, and organized skepticism. And these are very basic rules for research ethics, which is actually not doesn't stick to any ideology but the ideology of openness, which does not, of course, mean that we should disclose everything, because we cannot. But these are put to a hard test these days, because we have to decide and we have to do, we have to foresee, we have to apply the principle of cautiousness, or to føre var in Norwegian, in order to precautionary principles. Thanks, precautionary principle, and that's very hard because we cannot foresee. So the dilemma here is: should we restrict ourselves? Should we put limitations to? Should we because we are afraid it could be misused, or should we do the opposite? Maybe we should do the opposite, but then we need to inform the emerging technologies by all these ethical concerns. Okay, so, yeah. I'll just leave this. This is my very last slide, and I just wanted to stop here. Academic freedom, because that's I wanted us to get to that, because technology, or what we are doing in technology, has very much to do with it comes very close to the dilemmas and how to prevail or maintain academic freedom. High quality research ethical commitments, and my. And I think this is my last point, that knowledge is not a scarce resource. It's not like when we sell something, that we lose something and someone other takes over. We still have the knowledge if we share it with someone. So research ethical commitment, open science, sharing of knowledge. Scientists give up intellectual property rights in exchange of recognition and esteem. This from copyright to copyleft. Of course, this is a bit, put it very shortly, and there are lots of dilemmas. But I think that if we want to stick to these ideals and this ethos, it takes a lot of ethical reflection as well as technological competence. Thank you.
So thank you very, very much for this lecture. I think it became clear that there's still a lot to be discussed, and we could have spent some more time here. But I think in terms of research and education, it's very important that we include this. Even